This is the Res Ed podcast, produced by Media Snackers with Global Kids. So welcome to the first Res Ed podcast, produced by Media Snackers for Global Kids. We're joined by Rick and Shauna from Global Kids, and they're going to give us an overview of Res Ed. So Rick, it's over to you.
Thanks, DK. We're super excited about launching this social network. So let me give you just a few words about what Res Ed is about. This is basically a social network for educators who use virtual worlds or massively multiplayer online games for learning, particularly for those who work directly with the learners, the practitioners in the field, if you will. What we've found at Global Kids in numerous conversations that we've had with educators, we've had with various institutions, that there's been this ongoing need for practical conversation and information sharing among educators who work in Wyville, who work in Second Life, who work with Warcraft, who work with There.com, and there just isn't that common space. So that was the kind of motivation behind creating Res Ed. And we were very lucky enough to get some support from a number of generous donors, particularly the Haystack Fund and the MacArthur Foundation, so that we could launch this social network. In terms of the name, it does bear a little bit of explaining. Res Ed is kind of a play on words. The word res, if you remember if you're as old as I am, you remember the 1980s movie Tron, where they used the word res, which then became kind of a meme among certain kinds of geeks. And in Second Life, to res something means to create something, to create a 3D object. So we pulled that term in as a general word that is related to virtual worlds. And of course, Ed refers to education, hence the name Res Ed. This is a network for teachers, for parents, for museum curators, for trainers, librarians, practitioners who are working in this field of education that are using this new form of media. And particularly those who aren't using them yet but are thinking about using them, that's another community we want to make sure is included.
Okay, thank you, Rick. And Shauna, what activities are planned for Res Ed then?
Thanks, DK. Res Ed will include a range of activities that we hope will be both practical and engaging. Here are a few things we look forward to down the line. There will be a podcast series with the latest news and interviews from practitioners and those from whom practitioners would like to hear, such as tool developers and funders, and the podcast will occur twice a month. You can look forward to them beginning next week. Best practices will include practitioners who are sharing what they've learned, moderated weekly discussions, and both the best practices and discussions will be available the first week of May. We'll also have a library of resources directly about virtual worlds or contextualized to be relevant for practitioners. In the initial stages of developing Res Ed and in preparation for its official launch at the end of May, we'd like to see people get involved now in the following ways. We'd like people to join the network at resed.org, suggest topics that you'd like covered on Res Ed, participate in blog discussions, listen and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, subscribe to the listserv, submit a best practice, create and participate in relevant communities around tools, environment, subject areas, and worlds, join the events committee, and submit material to the library, text, video, photos, or audio.
Wow. So now we got to pitch it out to get involved. Thank you guys, Rick and Shauna. I'm now joined by Barry and Amira from Global Kids. I was going to kick on with the news.
Thanks, DK. The most significant news this month was the historic April 1st congressional hearings on virtual worlds.
It's a long title. Get ready. The 110th Congress Subcommittee on Telecommunications and the Internet hearing entitled Online Virtual Worlds, Applications and Avatars in a User-Generated Medium.
There were four testimonies presented, all about Second Life, addressing various aspects of virtual worlds.
Philip Rosedale, the founder and CEO of Linden Lab, spoke about Second Life. No surprise there. Susan Tenby, senior manager at TechSoup, addressed a nonprofit angle.
Colin J. Parrish, the vice president of digital convergence at IBM Research, spoke about business applications of Second Life, while Larry Johnson, the CEO of the New Media Consortium, spoke about the potential of virtual worlds and about education in general.
And this new segment will be followed by the interview with Larry, about his experience of the Congress. So back to you, Amira.
And both video of the testimonies and their prepared testimonies are all available in the Res Ed Library section.
So tell us about the tone of the hearing, guys, and was it all about terrorism and gambling?
Actually, it was surprisingly thoughtful, given how heated it could have been in the current political climate.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Representative Edward Markey, who's the chair of the subcommittee and clearly the force behind the hearing, gave a pretty remarkable overview of the potential of virtual worlds in his introductory remarks. It's worth checking out. There was the inevitable questions, of course, about the threat of terrorists and virtual worlds.
And about protecting youth from predators.
I'd like to ask the more commercially driven virtual worlds how they're protecting youth from predatory advertisers. But yeah, besides that, the tone was pretty much about openness, about learning something new, kind of recognizing the potential impact on society that virtual worlds could have, both as a creative disruptive force and the impact it could have for positive good.
Even if there were many stupid jokes.
Yeah, there was a lot of stupid jokes. They made me cringe, but to me that just kind of showed how uncomfortable they were taking this new media seriously. You know, it's nothing new there. But at the same time, one representative said, I'm quoting here, while some might think of it as a little peculiar, it was not long ago that social networking was outside the mainstream, and it is very quickly becoming the mainstream. So at the same time, while they were making silly jokes, I was still impressed with their understanding of the integration curves around emerging media.
Yeah, totally. It was an important first step for our community, for virtual worlds to be taken seriously as a tool for education.
So you say this was the first step, so what's the next step after this?
Well, kind of in many ways, it's up to us to carry on the public discourse, to hold public discussions, kind of like this, you know, ask the hard questions.
Well, what are those hard questions?
What are children learning within virtual worlds? How are children kept safe and empowered within virtual worlds? Do the applications of virtual worlds contribute to the creation of a more just and equitable society, or do they further exacerbate existing inequalities?
Actually, the first blog on ResEd will ask this very question. What questions do you think need to be asked? And then later, we need to ask what we can do about it and bring these back to the attention of government officials.
Okay, so let's move on to upcoming events, guys, and the next period the ResEd community should know about. Give us a kind of overview.
Well, there's a lot going on.
The Federal Virtual Worlds Expo will be held on April 24th through 25th in Washington, D.C. It's the latest project of the Federal Consortium for Virtual Worlds, a newly formed group of federal government employees and contractors interested in exploring the use of virtual worlds in government, sharing best practices and policies, creating shared repositories, and networking. Thanks to Kieran Ngowe for submitting this event to ResEd, and more details can be found on the show notes of this episode.
The V Business Expo, Virtual Business Expo, is also this week, running from April 24th to 27th within Second Life. Of most interest to the ResEd community, there will be 7 presentations as part of the education track, addressing educator tools, research findings, how virtual worlds change the nature of teaching, and more. Nick Wilson, who's one of the coordinators of the event, wrote about the inclusion of educators in the conference on his blog, and I'll quote from him. The field is massive and full of passionate, dedicated, and resourceful people that seem to be constantly pushing at the edges of what these platforms can do. I'm really excited about the prospects of seeing some of the rising stars in virtual education speak at the expo and hope you'll join us for those sessions as well.
Nice. Aren't you presenting as well?
Actually, I'm speaking in one of the other threads. The panel's called Doing Well by Doing Good, Supporting Nonprofits and Philanthropies in a Virtual World. It's going to be an open discussion. It will be at 10:30 California time on April 25th.
Great. More info on this event can be found in the show notes, and thanks to Bruce Somerville for submitting this event to ResEd. Finally, we have the upcoming Games, Learning, and Society Conference, July 10th through 11th in Madison, Wisconsin.
These are the best conferences. I love going to the GLS. I'll read from their site. The GLS conference is about real-life people playing real-life video games and what they learn from doing it. It fosters substantive discussion and collaboration amongst academics, designers, and educators interested in how game technologies, commercial games, and others can enhance learning, culture, and education.
Even more exciting, there are 60 scholarship seats for pre-K 16 educators to attend GLS, covering conference admissions as well as 2 nights room and board.
That's a great deal. Someone out there clearly values the work we're all doing with virtual worlds and education.
It's all sounding like, guys, well, I just want to thank you for the update. If you have any news or events our listeners there like to submit it to the upcoming ResEd podcast, please send them to resednews@globalkids.org.
My name is Larry Johnson. I am the CEO of the New Media Consortium, which is a not-for-profit association of more than 250 colleges, universities, and museums that look at emerging technologies.
Wicked. Well, it's a pleasure to have you here in the first ResEd podcast, Larry. So I want
to
jump straight in and ask.
Here.
Brilliant. I want to ask you the big juicy question around something that happened on April the 1st. You were lucky enough to go into Congress and present to them around kind of virtual worlds for education. Why don't you give us an overview of what happened there?
The committee was the House Subcommittee on Telecommunications and the Internet, and their role in the U.S. Congress is really pretty important when you think about the network and its dissemination. They're the ones that control the regulations around cell phone networks, around the backbone of the Internet itself. They're the ones that are having the conversations around net neutrality, and in particular, they were interested in trying to understand where the emerging universe of virtual worlds is going. Many people talk about it as the 3D web. And so they invited myself, a pretty brilliant guy named Philip Rosedale, who was the inventor of Second Life, as well as Colin Paris, the vice president from IBM, and Susan Tenby, who works a lot with not-for-profits in Second Life, and they asked the four of us to give an overview, first from Philip, about the environment itself, and then Colin presented the perspective of business. My role was to present the perspective of education, and Susan presented the perspective of the non-governmental, not-for-profit sector.
And could you summarize for us what you encapsulated in your statement to them then?
I really felt that it was an important opportunity. In fact, I was surprised by how I approached it. It's not like I don't have the opportunity to convey my thoughts in public. I do it virtually every day. But I found it somewhat humbling to go to the Congress. My membership actually had a little bit of fun with it, and we took the Frank Capra poster of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and they made it up with my avatar's image, Larry, you know, Mr. Pixel Goes to Washington. But it, in fact, was a much more serious undertaking, and so I spent a lot of time preparing, far more than I might on any other kind of paper, because I felt like that the voice of education really needed to be heard by that group, and I wanted to ensure that the dialogue that we had was a serious one, and that they knew that the opportunities for teaching and learning in virtual space were profound. And so I literally reached out to our membership, which includes thousands of folks at hundreds of universities, to help me to think through it, and spent about 3 weeks framing the case to be made. And mostly what I wanted them to do was to look out to the future of this and to enable it rather than to restrict it. So often politicians want to bolt things down and put fences and boundaries around them, and this really felt like one to me that it was far too early to do that. So I wanted to convey to them, number one, a sense of the space and the opportunity, and number two, a sense of what they could do. And so I spoke to the things that great congresses of the past had done, and looking back over U.S. history, you know, when the United States was expanding westward, there was a federal land grant program that created what we call the land grant colleges, the Morrill Act, that created hundreds of universities in the emerging territories, and eventually in every state in the Union. If you could point to a single visionary act of Congress that is one of the reasons why the American higher education system is so well regarded, it was that investment in the future generations of America. And I really felt like that Congress needed to be thinking about it in that way, the same way that they made the investment with the GI Bill, with soldiers coming back from World War II. After World War I, when the soldiers came back, they flooded the economy, and we ended up with the Great Depression. There simply was nowhere for them all to go. With the GI Bill, what happened was instead they made an investment in society and sent these folks off to college. Many of them became lawyers and leaders of all kinds. And you can point to a half a dozen other really influential, really important pieces of legislation that were passed by very, very special Congresses in our history, and I wanted to encourage them to be one of those.
Brilliant. Well, I'd love to quote something back to you because I want you to expand on just this one point here. You said in your testimony, the emerging landscape of virtual worlds represents a profound, as profound an opportunity, as profound a driver of changes in the ways we think, learn, and work as any technology that has ever preceded it. Now, that's quite a really big claim right there. Could you kind of expand on that just a little bit for us?
Well, I really do believe that based on the 2.5 years that we've been working in our project, we've got nearly 7,500 people that we work with every day in there, more than 100 institutions. And what we're seeing is that virtual worlds are already bridging borders across the globe and bringing people of many cultures and languages together that are very nearly as rich as face-to-face interactions. And in the world that we see today, I think it would be hard for anyone to argue that we need to be talking to each other more. It's when we're not talking to each other that we end up in some of the horrific situations that we see around the globe. These spaces are already allowing the visualization of ideas and concepts in three dimensions that are leading to new insights and deeper learning across the board, and we're already seeing changes in the way that people work, learn, shop, and conduct business. And what excites me about it is that the technology is very immature yet. Just as the World Wide Web unfolded over the last 15 years to erase the boundaries between us in many, many ways, as we've all become used to easy communications. We're using Skype today in a conversation between the UK and the US that, you know, it's just an everyday occurrence anymore. Well, that's actually a pretty special thing that we can just do this for free whenever we want. And it took time for the web to evolve those kinds of tools, 15 years since Tim Berners-Lee wrote his now famous paper that outlined what the World Wide Web could be. I think over the next 15 years, the virtual worlds are going to rapidly evolve into a rich three-dimensional extension of ourselves that is really going to change the ways that we do things, simply because it's going to be so easy for us to bridge those borders.
And tell me then about, did the Congress get this 3D extension of self? What were their reaction to your statements?
Some of them did. The fact is that the members of Congress, just as I'm sure members of Parliament are, they're politicians, and you know they have a self-interest in being reelected, And to do that, they tend to focus on a narrow range of issues that they build their candidacies around. And so we saw that very clearly in some of the comments. And so one of the representatives from California spoke to an article that, you know, came out, has been largely discredited, about Islamic jihadists in Second Life. And, you know, there's just no basis to that. That's really fanning the flames of fear, I think, in a way that serves no one. So I was fairly disappointed in that. Two other issues surfaced. One was money laundering, kind of speaking to the same fear. And it's that politics of fear that I would love to see virtual worlds help to erode. The third thing was also something very fearful, and no one can argue against child predators. You know, that's not something that any of us want to have. But my own feeling is that there's nothing new in the virtual worlds in that regard that's not already taken care of by existing laws that govern the internet. It still is carried over the same transmission lines and the same laws will still apply. And so I really felt that was a little bit of grandstanding. One of the congressmen from Illinois took issue with some of the statistics that I quoted, because I really do feel like that for a nation like the United States to really be a leader in this field, we need to look at the state of our infrastructure, which I think is relatively dismal compared to countries like your own and Europe, particularly in Asia, Singapore and Japan, even China. This particular congressman really pushed back on that And with some fairness, I suppose, but nonetheless, it was a point that I felt needed to be made. And so in each of those cases, you know, those were issues that they wanted to make sure that they got their voices into the mix. It was a bit surreal because a lot of the time what was happening in the hearing was the congresspeople talking to us about their opinions about things. And so each of us really only got to speak for 5 minutes, and it was a 2.5 hour hearing. So you can just kind of do the math. Okay, so that's 20 minutes for the four witnesses, and then we had a round of questions, and each of the questions was limited to 5 minutes, and so yeah, fully an hour and a half of it was, you know, statements being made by the members of the committee.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was a civics lesson on a whole new level.
In the real level, isn't it? Okay, let's move on very briefly now. We've got a couple of minutes left of this chat. I'd love to point to something that you guys do that is almost a repository of information that people can go download, check out, and apply, maybe adopt, adapt, whatever. And this is something that you do through NMC called the Horizon Reports. Tell us a little bit about them, and maybe tell us about how they started as well.
The Horizon Reports are something that the NMC does every year. And in January of each year, we publish the Horizon Report. And it looks out to the future to profile 6 emerging technologies that we think are going to be very interesting. And we use an advisory board that typically involves people from at least a dozen countries. So we try to make it be global in perspective, cross-sector, not just education, but very much focused on education as the purpose of the report. And so we've done that now for 5 years, and it's grown to be easily the most influential report for higher education that's out there. One reason is because it's very succinct, and it's just 32 pages, and each of the technologies is profiled in a very brief format, rich with lots of links and stuff. Each year, we pick one of the technologies and build a demonstration project around it, and that is actually how we got into Second Life. In 2006, colleges and universities were beginning to really pay attention to educational gaming, and we decided to build a project and ultimately settled on Second Life, bought an island, and the next thing we knew, now we have nearly 100 islands, and our project is self-sustaining and easily the largest educational effort around. The Horizon Report is going global this year. We released in 2007 the Spanish version and the Catalan version. In 2008, we have released those languages again as well, but we're also looking at German, French, and Italian, as well as an Arabic version. Wow. We'd love to have a version in Chinese. That'll probably be in 2009 before we get to that. We're going to do an Australian version of the report. There is a museum version of the report that's being that's underway right now, and in 2009 we hope to do a European version of the report.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. And we need to wrap this up, so I'm going to wrap it up with a future question. Tell us what you guys are involved with that's coming on the Horizon line, and just give us a flavor of what's coming.
You know, as we've looked at the 5 years of the Horizon Report, one of the things that has surfaced is that there are what we're calling meta-trends that have been influencing the ways that we think about technology for a long time. And I'll just zero in on a few of those. Three, we've identified 7 actually, but these three I think are particularly important. One is the ubiquitousness of the network being truly anywhere, and at the same time the device is getting smaller and smaller. And so increasingly your access to the network is through the phone in your hand. And with devices that are coming out these days from really all the major phone manufacturers, but led initially by the iPhone, we're really seeing mobile broadband take off. The second is a move towards expressing and visualizing things in 3 dimensions. And we see that everywhere you look across technology. So printing technology, there's rapid prototyping, actually literally 3D printing tools for the engineering industries that overlay information on top of reality, called augmented reality. And we're seeing virtual reality not only being used for social spaces like Second Life, but for research and exploration uses such as petroleum, you know, looking for petroleum or visualizing data sets of all kinds. And then the final one, and probably the most significant trend of all that we've noticed in these reports, and the one that's going to continue to fuel things, is the increasing socialization of the tools on the network. And so the organizing principle is less and less around files and networks, and more around people and the people that they interact with. And I think that's a profound shift that we've only begun to scratch the surface of.
And tell us finally what NMC are doing in the future. What are your future operations? Anything exciting?
Well, we have just announced Open Virtual Worlds, which is an extension of the work that we're doing actually in Second Life to look at other platforms. There are more than 70 virtual world platforms in development right now, and most observers would predict that there's going to be a breakthrough product come through any time. We want to make sure that we follow that, so we're looking at that very, very closely. We're going to be doing increasing work with the Around the Horizon report for special groups, as I've noticed. But most of all, we're going to be continuing to try and push the boundaries on how people think about teaching and learning in using the network, using virtual worlds, using technology in general.
Well, Larry Johnson, thanks for your time to give up today to speak into ResEd and Media Snackers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
This is DK signing off the first ResEd podcast. All the links referenced in this podcast, as well as the full transcripts, will be available on the show notes at resed.org. Join us in the coming weeks. We'll be featuring more interviews and news for the ResEd community at resed.org.